Motorcycle Man. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Motorcycle Man podcast. I am Ted, your host, and this is episode 376. All right, joining me here today in the V-Twin Cafe is artist David Yule. That's right, boys and girls. Wonderful artwork. I tell you what, if you're not familiar with David's work, you need to get familiar with his work. It's wonderful stuff. But before we get into this interview, Motorcycle Man Podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. They're offering high quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to ScorpionUSA.com and, of course, Wild Ass Seats. You can improve that comfort and your ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, get on over to Wild-Ass.com and tell the real Craig Johnson that you want your cushion. And our new sponsor, Stuck Up Sticker Company. Everybody wants some stickers. You need stickers. Your fans want stickers. So get that from the Stuck Up Sticker Company. Now, these guys are musicians, and they get it. They understand cost, turnaround time, and quality is what matters. They take care of those details, and they know you don't have too much to spend, and you need the most for your budget. So the Stuck Up Sticker Company. Let the sticker Jesus take care of your sticker needs. And as always, boys and girls, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at TobaccoMotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco riding jeans and a California riding shirt, and I can't tell you how much I love these products. I wear them for every ride, and I won't ride without them. Now, your safety is worth it. So get on over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. Time now for the interview with David. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 176 of the Motorcycle Man Podcast. I'm Ted, your host, and joining me today all the way from the lovely state Colorado, right?
Yep, Colorado. Golden, Colorado.
Golden, Colorado. Isn't that the beer town?
Yeah. Wake up. Smell of hops in the morning, yeah.
Mr. David Uhl, artist. David Uhl. How you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Yeah.
You pronounce it Uhl when you're in Deutschland.
Right? In pretty much. It's Uhl? That's how you pronounce
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it has been for many years, but yeah, if you head over there, they got the little umlaut.
Yeah.
Uhl.
Yeah, you know, because I was like, is that how I brush? Maybe I should ask him first, but no, of course I didn't, but
that's
all right. That's all right. How you doing?
Happens all the time, as you can imagine.
I can imagine. I can imagine. How you been?
I'm great. Yeah. Just super great. Just got back from a trip back to the tundra of Milwaukee. It was like 13 below zero when I got off the plane.
No.
With a 30-mile-an-hour wind.
Oh, geez. So, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. Wow. I haven't been that cold since I was a wee boy in Michigan.
Did you just say wee boy?
Just a little wee boy, yeah.
I'll tell you what, for anybody out there who doesn't know who you are and what you do, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us who you are, your motorcycle self, and what you do.
Oh, man, I'm a painter of motorcycles. Not the actual bike itself, but lifestyle, and mostly concentrated on further past, you know, turn of the century, let's say when Harley started,
and, yeah,
in India, and all of those fantastic inventions were in flux back then. And,
yeah,
I really find that time really interesting for myself, just through photographs. And so I paint old black and white photographs and bring them to life. That's how I started, anyway. And it's expanded into all kinds of things, but it started.
We'll talk about that.
My first painting ever was a Harley Davidson scene from the 30s.
Oh, wow.
And it was done from one of my buddies, Vinny Terranova, who was the dealer here in Denver for many years. Was always like, yeah, you got to paint a Harley. You got to do something like that. And I never painted. And I thought, well, okay, I'll try doing that. Seems like I'm more interested in some of the old stuff, you know, where it's really got a lot of character. And then these people were unique to look at. They don't look like they do now.
Right.
So find me a cool old photograph. And he was digging through all of his archives boxes and came up with this little wallet size picture. And I ended up kind of blowing it up and doing a drawing and painting that. I think it was like 36 inches wide at the time.
Wow.
And I called it Change in the Weather and turned out really fabulous. And I took it to Milwaukee and they fell in love with it. And then they, Harley Davidson, opened their archives to me. And that was just, you know,
candy store
for me. I mean, yeah, wide open.
Wow. Is that how you got started in this genre?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Really?
I went to Milwaukee. They fell in love with what I did. And they said, basically, paint our history. And so they opened up all these photographs. And in my book, it has this story. And it has a lot of the photographs that actually inspired me. And, you know, some of them have just never been seen because they're just stacked away in these archives. And some of them are so old they were glass plate negatives. So they didn't even have film.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah.
Wow.
And those are the best.
Wow.
So that just took off. I mean, and God, thousands and thousands of paintings later. That was in 1998 when I did that.
Oh, was that your first one?
Yeah, it was my first painting was a Harley. Wow. I had never painted oils before. I was a commercial illustrator. You know, it's all in the book, but you know, when I never took art lessons. I went to I was in Michigan, way out in the boondocks. I lived in a little fishing town called Luna Pier. And my parents wanted me to go to a really good school. So they made me work as a janitor at this school called St. John's through the summer to pay for my tuition as like cleaning toilets and stairs. And so I did that. And they sent me away to a school that was about 2 hours away.
Wow.
And so I had to stay with other people to go to high school, to go to this school because they were so interested. It was a Jesuit school, so I had to wear a tie every day. There was no girls, and there was no art. No
oh, really?
Art, believe it or not. Yeah, so I had like stacked classes of Project Harvard physics and trigonometry and all that stuff. So I ended up taking notes all day, you know, with my trusty Bic ballpoint, right? and I got so bored doing that, I ended up inventing my own calligraphy style and doing a lot of doodles. You know what I mean? I was the doodle king. I went really far with it.
Yeah.
So far, in fact, senior year, I mean, I started drawing girls because it was all guy school, right?
So yeah.
It's like, I think this is a pretty good product for this school. I drew some pretty, pretty ladies and ended up selling them. So I was thinking, this art thing is kind of cool. Yeah. And then senior year, I was actually studying at that school to become a marine biologist because my father was a charter boat captain and I do love the ocean and all things marine. So senior year, I decided to apply for a scholarship that they gave to one senior in the whole country if you won this contest, right? And here I am, this guy who never did art, thinking, well, that's my ticket out. If I can win that damn scholarship, I have my choice of six schools around the country that they'll pay for.
Really? Oh, my God.
So, yeah. And I had to do things that I'd never done before. I had to do a self-portrait, and I had to do a product illustration, and then pen and ink. And I worked my ass off and got three pretty strong pieces. And applied and actually won the damn scholarship.
Damn.
So that was a big happy day for a son of a fisherman in Luna Pier, Michigan. And
imagine that.
Yeah, I was on my way out of Luna Pier, and I went to work at a chemical factory, filling toilet bowl boxes or bowls with cleanser, and at $4.50 an hour, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I did that for 3 months to make enough money to buy an Amtrak ticket. And go to Colorado and then start school.
Wow.
So that's how I got started.
Damn, good for you. Art. That's how you got started in that. Now, you didn't draw any, you didn't do any drawing or nothing prior to that.
I played around with it, but I was never serious. You know,
really?
I come from a family of seven, and six of them are full-time artists. So, and most of them were before me.
Right.
So they were always doing art. And so art has been in my family. You know, so every year at Christmas, guess what? Art supplies. Yeah. More art supplies. Oh, my God.
Great.
Fun.
Wow. So you have like this natural born-in talent.
Yeah, the family's bizarre that way. You know, we're like the Wyeths. There's just so many artists.
You know,
we all speak the same language.
I just found it, one of the main things about your artwork that always fascinated me is your amazing ability to capture the human figure, especially women. The way it's like looking at photographs. I don't know how you do it. That's an amazing talent.
Well, you paint what you love, right? And you know, in all honesty, I could probably lose the motorcycle sometimes.
But so many other guys do that. So.
That's why I went to art school anymore. I mean, I had nude models and life drawing every 2-3 days a week, and those were my favorite classes. Wow. So I learned the anatomy, and and I still I have a gallery here in Denver that has. That hosts some of the best artists in the world. They're really
good.
Yeah. Just knock me in the dirt. But they're really great artists. And they have painting classes every Wednesday. So I go and, you know, pretty much wake up how to do my art with being around those guys. Because, you know, there's no tricks. You just have a model and everyone's in a circle and you paint what you see.
Yeah.
So if you want to, like, trial by fire, that's the thing to do.
That keeps
me honest, you know.
I want to talk about your artwork a little bit. You know, what medium were you using when you were doing the artwork for Harley Davidson?
Well, I've only really been interested in two mediums. When I was before all this fine art stuff started with the the archival imagery, I had not painted before, but I did get a t-shirt contract with a company called Hollyback.
Okay.
And so I ended up doing about 800 t-shirt designs.
Oh, man.
In fact, wow. I'm sure many of your listeners have a lot of my shirts. And all through the 90s and early 2000s. Yeah. Some of the best-selling shirts I've ever had. And I did them all with pencils and, and some kind of airbrushy, but mostly pencil stuff and a little bit of gouache. So I did a lot of that before I started oil painting. And then once I went down the oil painting route, I just never turned back. I only do oils and watercolors because they're the most expressive, in the fine art world, you know, where, like I said, I paint with these masters, these guys that are just blowing me away. I'm probably more appreciated for my watercolors by the art community.
Really? Damn.
Yeah, because they're very artistic and they're very unique to me. You know, my oil paintings in the biker world, they have their own place and they have a following and they're cool. But in the art world, this is a different group of people completely.
Really?
And they look not at subject matter. They look at
technique, right?
How you do it, you know, and what your take of the world is, and watercolor shows that off a lot more because it's not a forgiving medium. And once you go down that road,
in my life I've got experience with oils, of course, the pastels, of course, and watercolor, and even some of the other ones. And I know that oil is your most forgiving.
Oh, yeah. You can paint one oil painting your whole life.
Yeah.
It'll get really thick. Probably weighs a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Keep changing.
But I do know, what's the other one?
Acrylic?
Oh, acrylic. I can't hate acrylic enough.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I cannot paint. It's acrylic is disgusting to me, but... It's just plastic, you know, and
it's unforgiving.
It doesn't have
the
vibrancy. And oils, you know, one of my favorite things to do is really play with edges, you know, where one subject will bleed to the next or a background is involved. And those edges are everything.
Oh, yeah.
So I really have fun with how things interact.
Yeah.
and oils that you have some time to play with that. And it's, you go through these stages, like when you first start a project, you know, you're blocking it in, and then you're applying all the paint to build something, right? And then you get to this point, well, I kind of built it, it's all there. Then, you know, sometimes I'll smoke a hit of pot or something, and then Kali comes in, then you destroy it, right? You destroy what you built. And then you go back to building it again, and then you get this perfect happy medium of hide and seek, right? So you give it, and then you take it away. You give it, and you take it away. So it's this balance of like hide and seek, basically. It's like the oldest game in the universe, right? You do that with a little baby. They get it. So, yeah, you don't give it all away. And if you do, it's a really boring piece.
Yeah.
So oils allow you to do that.
Yeah.
When acrylic just doesn't. And it's always the same edge, you know? It's 55 is how I drive, and everything's right around the corner.
Have you ever met Frank Frazetta?
No.
But I had the chance to meet him a few years back, and I was talking to his son later on. Frank was out hanging out on the porch of at his gallery, and we were in the gallery and we were looking at the paintings and stuff, and we were talking to his son, and they said, now mind you, he painted a lot of these paintings years ago, but the son said that they had to keep him out of there because he kept wanting to go in and change them.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
I know. After a little while, you know, oil, there comes a point where you can't do anything with oil because it's done. But man,
it should be.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, to a point. Yeah. So, what made you move into fine art?
You know, this is a little known, but you know, like I was telling you, I graduated from high school and had a scholarship.
Okay,
to Colorado Institute of Art. I had my choice of six schools around the country, one in Orlando, one in Pittsburgh. Anyway, I chose Colorado, came out here, and it was an advertising design program. So they basically spread me into doing design work and all types of things. Paste up was one of the things back then.
Yeah.
But really a commercial program. So I came out, went through half of that and quit, right?
Wow.
Because I just did not want to do that. So I started doing went back to my ballpoint pen and started drawing like just freestyle, whatever I felt like. And I ended up doing, you know, wild spaceships and things like that. And after I had quit, I moved to California for a short time. Somebody wanted me to go do paint on tiles with glaze and then throw the wall.
Yeah,
and I said, I don't think I like that too much. So I actually sent some work to Disney and ended up doing a bunch of freelance stuff for Disney movies.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I did like spaceship designs and aliens and all this fun crap. And I loved it. So I could just sit and dream all day. So I developed that ballpoint pen technique to a pretty high degree. I still have them, and they're really wonderful drawings. I'm very proud of them. So I ended up getting tired of California, even back then. I was not a California kind of guy.
Right.
So I came back to Colorado and started a commercial illustration business. I got a rep, and I started using that same technique, the ballpoint pen, on a gray paper. It was gray flannel. You'd be an artist, you probably know what I'm talking about. It's like a textured gray, beautiful paper. It was my tints, and then there was like a gray flannel. So I would take the ballpoint pen and do a drawing of a product, let's say a ski boot or a medical device or something, all black on gray with the ballpoint, come back in with colored pencil, highlights.
Oh.
And then so you have the whole lower end, and then after that you come in with the upper end with highlights and a little bit of color.
Yeah.
That technique, I put it in a directory called Showcase. Back then, all the art directors of the whole country used to look through these directories to find artists that they like to use for ads or whatever they were doing, whatever project. Sure. I did an ad, cost like, I think it was like $1,200, which is a lot of money for me back then. And the thing just went ballistic.
Wow.
I think I got like well over 1,000 calls on that technique because I was the only one in the country doing it.
Oh, wow.
And that took off. So all through the 80s, and probably into halfway through the 90s, I did commercial illustration of everything you can imagine.
Wow.
I mean, I met Steve Jobs. I was working with Apple computer stuff. I did all the stuff for Fred and Federal Express, all their artwork for...
Oh, no kidding.
6 years, all their collateral artwork. Wow. I was their cover artist. I did all the... Remember Brookstone? I did all the Brookstone stores. So you walked into a Brookstone store, they had all these point of purchase signs.
Sure, yeah.
That would tell you how their products were. That was me.
Wow.
So they would send me all these products, and then I would kind of understand how they work, and then do a drawing showing little cutaways of how this product could help you.
Yeah, man.
Textbooks, and I mean, a lot of military stuff, tons of medical. I did covers for Sports Illustrated and Time Magazine, all kinds of shit. I mean, everything you can imagine.
Wow.
And then got tired of all my art getting sent back to me and going into the drawer because no one would hang that stuff.
Like, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's time for a change. So that's when I started doing the t-shirts for Harley, and then took that to a whole new level. And then got tired of all my art getting chewed up in lint traps and dryer. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, I guess I would.
I need some art that was going to go on the wall and last.
Yeah.
And stay for a little while.
Damn.
So that's when I started the oils in 98.
And 98, you started doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I've only been painting, well, it's getting to be a bit of time now.
Yeah.
But since 98 is when I started.
Now, let's talk about some of your subjects that you got in your subject matter. Where do you get your inspiration for those?
Well, like I said, you know, I started this whole art program because I was incredibly fascinated by the turn of the century.
Yeah.
You know, from about 1860 through about 1920, with the best artists that have ever been were in that period.
Right.
Yeah. Sargent, Savoia, I mean, Monet, all the French Impressionists, and just lovely.
Yeah.
The most beautiful paintings. Wish I had some. But so I was thinking, okay, I love these paintings so much. I want to do them. And I want to do a subject matter that almost is from that time period. So when someone walks in to look at this thing on your wall, they're like, where the hell did you get that old antique painting? And it's timeless then, right?
Oh, sure.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Subject right. And a style that is 100 years old, you know, or more than that. And so I was thinking this is perfect way to like establish a whole diorama of a body of work that's all about bringing back an epic style, some of these just beautiful things that happened back in the turn of the century and then beyond.
Yeah.
And I really love stuff all the way through, let's say, the 50s.
Right.
I've stayed away from the 60s mostly because that's kind of David Mann's territory, you know, and the choppers and all that. And,
right.
And I can do it, and I like a lot of that stuff. But personally, what's inspired me is more of the older stuff that you know, people really looked quite different back then. They all wore hats and...
Everybody wore a suit. Everybody dressed. Yeah, everybody was dressed nice, and there was a little bit of class going on there, right?
Damn. Oh yeah, what a different time! And kind of in the last 5 years, I've really done a deep dive into that period. The French called it La Belle Époque. It was the beautiful time.
Oh, okay.
And if you think about it, that's when most everything that we use today was invented.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
from the cars, the airplanes, I mean, even the telegraph is basically a computer that's just been upsized. And we're still standing on the shoulders of these giants. All the science that was Heisenberg and Einstein and Bohr.
I 100%
brilliant
agree.
People. Frank Lloyd Wright, the best architecture ever. And
I agree.
Look at the buildings they built.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Exactly. Like anything up to the 1950s, everything was new. Everything was like, there was a lot of wonder in the world. There was a lot of surprise. There was a lot of, wow, look at this. Look what we just did. You know, everything was like brand new, no matter what it was. So to capture that in artwork, I love that stuff, especially from the early 1900s when motorcycling was in its infancy. I love that period. I love that.
Well, so was automobiles and airplanes. I mean, I love all that stuff. I do. I have a whole aviation body of work.
Yeah, I know.
I go to Oshkosh every year, and Yeah, I just love all that. The trains, planes, automobiles, everything about it, the buildings. And, you know, there was that particular time was when my grandfather was alive. And I didn't know him well. He died almost when I was born. But he was friends with Thomas Edison and Henry Ford. He was
really?
Yeah, he built a furniture company called Buell Art Steel out of Toledo, Ohio. And he supplied those factories that his friends were building with furniture, to like steel, cold rolled steel furniture.
Right.
He has a piece in the Brooklyn Museum of Art called The Perfection Chair. But I have them all over the place. And Restoration Hardware copies his stuff now. And if you Google, like David Ewell, because I'm well known for steampunk, but you're going to get my grandfather because his furniture is all considered steampunk.
Oh, really?
Right?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it is cool stuff.
Do you have a favorite subject matter? You know, like, I know you do have some of your steampunk pieces, and of course you got your historical ones. Do you have a favorite that you like to, the kind of theme that you like to paint?
Not really. You know, I like bouncing all over the place.
Oh, yeah?
You know, I like the steampunk stuff. It's really fanciful, and, you know, I have a fun time inventing these otherworldly scenarios. Or,
yeah.
You know, like time travel.
Yeah, exactly.
Really. Whole different thing. And honestly, when I first came out with that first steampunk piece, I didn't know how I was going to do. I was set up a big show in New York with Copper Mike Cole, and he had won the year before at that IMG show. Yes, I can't remember the name of the show. There were a couple hundred thousand people there, but he had won the year before with his first steampunk bike, right?
Really?
It was like a new thing back then. Yeah. So they invited me to come, and I set up and had a really nice big booth there, and then I had the bike that he had won the year before, the bike build contest, and had the bike with a steampunk model, and I basically painted that piece, or at least a good chunk of it, there,
right
in New York, in front of all those people. And I was thinking, man, I don't know how this is going to go. Everyone's used to me painting these old scenes from the turn of the century in the 30s and the 40s. This thing's got like Jack the Ripper days and London. There was no motorcycles around.
That stuff is badass. I like it. Which was your first one?
It's called Steampunk Seduction. It was the girl with the red.
Steampunk
the red dress.
Yes. One of my favorites. One of my favorites.
Yeah, there's this dude in a top hat behind. It looks like he could be like Jack the Ripper.
Yep.
Like, who the hell is this dude? Walking in, it's very foggy. So
yep.
I just love that fog. Again, hide and seek is my key.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, just painting fog to start with is not easy anyway. Because, I mean, well, you throw this level of detail in your artwork it just blows me away, first of all. And I was curious, what determines your subject matter and the level of detail you're going to get into?
Well, many times the detail is all relative to who built the bike, you know?
Yeah.
And some of these guys I've worked with have an incredible amount of, that's what you do if you're a builder, right?
Yeah.
You want to take care of every centimeter on that bike. So for me to go and just rush through that would not be doing
it
justice.
Yeah, exactly.
Like stuck on this bike. And the majority of the painting is the bike trying to get that done first. So that's what it is. All right, let's get this goddamn bike done. This is going to take forever. But you got to do it. You've got to do it because it's just, you've got to do the just to give the subject its due. You know what I mean? They're beautiful creations. And so I end up spending an inordinate amount of time making sure the bike is accurate to how we built it. And then I can have some fun. But it's kind of like I always do that to myself. It's like, get the hard part out of the way. More the fastidious, mechanistic part.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to painting the girls or the background, that's when I'm the best. Right?
Did you have models for the girls? Use models or are you just
particular focused? Piece, that's the first steampunk piece, Jenny, she was there. She posed on that bike for me.
Wow.
And then we shot pictures of her. Actually, Mike did. And then I composed, we ended up composing the whole piece before it came. and painted on it while I was there.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, she was there for a reference in that same outfit.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really a fun time.
Now, do you have models for all your stuff, or has any of these women or the people in your paintings, did any of these come out of your head, or do you actually have models for all of them?
Some, not many. Like I said, I started with women or paintings of photographs that were women, but they were in black and white photos. And then as I got kind of bored with that, then I started creating my own versions and inventing scenarios.
Yeah.
And then in that case, I would go hire a model or get someone who wants to be in the next painting and do a whole photo shoot. It's like doing a movie.
Wow.
The latest Women of Harley I did was called Bootlegger Betty and Ugly Eddie. It was a really fun piece because a friend of mine had told me there was this airplane down in Florida in Lakeland that there was only two of them in the world.
Right.
And this particular plane was famous or infamous because it had been seized by the government for running booze, right? Back in 1933.
Really?
So we created this whole scene to put that thing back in 33 with this woman pilot and her crew. Actually, I had about 14 people down there, and had Warren Lane adding up cases of whiskey to my son. He was in the plane. And then I had my one of my club brothers, Ugly Eddie, with a Tommy gun, kind of looking out, making sure no one's going to steal. And then I put Betty Ballou on this, I think it was a 29, 30 bike, blue, in the foreground, smoking a cigar, right? Because she's getting ready, checking her watch to make sure they take off in time.
Right.
So what the crazy part is, and I put that all together, but when you buy that piece, you actually get a copy of the seizure report
from
the government saying they took all the guns, they took all the booze, and this is what they reported. And when she landed, she was at Joe Kennedy's ranch or farm.
Really?
So it was quite a story. So I ended up having to do it. Everything okay?
Yeah, no, I just shared the picture on the screen. I don't know if you can see it, but
there it is.
that's awesome.
That's her. Yeah, and that's my son Sterling up there grabbing the whiskey and Ugly Eddie.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Wow. You know, the thing is, like when I see you, I paint these pictures with these women in there, and then like you said, the bike itself is the subject matter. It's the art, but then once you add the woman in there, then you get a question like, well, what's the topic of the photograph then? Right? Is it the woman or is it the bike?
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Well, that's
stuff.
Artistically speaking, you avoid subjects that are too busy, try and keep, because your eye can kind of get shunned, but there's too much shit going on. So in order to paint a painting and not get all distracted by all the incredible contrast going on within a motorcycle and their shiny surfaces reflecting on each other and just stealing the show.
Yeah.
To get you to look up at a subject like a person or a woman in it, you've got to really play with the light and the shadow and then the edges on it. And so that's been the test of time, always to make sure that the compositions flow and we have a dominant subject matter. And usually it's the woman that will. So that's part of the reason I always choose women, because, they're beautiful subjects.
Oh, absolutely. In. Yeah. Nobody wants to look at ugly dudes. So,
No, it's kind of weird because I always get some blowback from...
Do you really?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, some ladies are walking. I go, where the hell's all the cute, sexy guys, man? They're like, that's what I want to see. I'm like, bullshit. I've painted several. I mean, I painted Elvis for the Elvis Presley Enterprises, and he was what a sexy of a guy there is. And
yeah.
I did six paintings of him.
Wow.
And still very few people bought it. I mean, men just do not sell in that genre. You know what sells if you're going to put a guy in a painting? Some really old crusty dude that is like, not threatening at all anymore. Yeah, he's kind of the sunset of his life.
Yeah, you've got a few like that. You have a few like that.
I do, and I love them. I mean, especially in the watercolor world, I've done a lot of those that aren't for sale, really. I love the faces. And there was a couple that I put into oil, but they sold really well. I remember the 100th anniversary, I had one called The Witness, and this really old, crusty dude from... It's called The Witness because he witnessed the first Harley and then the anniversary. So,
wow.
He's got a white beard, and he was reading the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about that party when they blocked off 94. And
I'm going to have to look that painting up now.
It's a good one, man. Yeah. I really liked that piece.
While we're on that subject, do you have a favorite David Ewell piece?
That's a common question, but no.
No?
Hell no. It's always the one you're painting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it has to be that way, right? Do you have any that you least favorite?
Yeah, you know those you don't remember.
Case in point.
No reason to.
Of course, I guess.
Yeah, there's some that are probably lowest on the totem pole, but not really.
Of course not.
Not really. I couldn't say.
Are you critical of your own work?
I mean, that's not a focal point. That's something you just rather forget about.
Yeah,
right?
It's true. So. Yeah. Are you critical of your own work?
You have to be. Yeah. That's that. Back to that whole thing of like using oil paints.
If you don't like it,
look back at a painting I did 20 years ago, and it's like, give me that thing. Make that better.
I was like, no, get away.
Yeah.
So you've expanded, like you said earlier, you expanded beyond motorcycles, and you got into aviation and auto and Western. Tell us about that.
Just horses. You know, I've been painting horses since the very beginning.
Oh, you got some beautiful ones. You got some beautiful ones here, too.
Yeah, they're really great. It's funny. I like iron horses and real horses, but they're beautiful subjects, and I'll end up painting a lot more of them over time.
Yeah.
But I love nature, you know? I mean, art is so much about like a savory of life. And so you see things that most people take for granted, how shadows are cascade down things.
Yep.
And, you know, I'll sit there on a sidewalk and be staring at the pattern from a tree above and how that looks. And just people are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Only artists will do that.
Do you not see this? It's fantastic.
Yeah, only artists will see that.
No, you end up really, really savoring the things that make your perception work, you know, perspective and how the mechanics of light and the temperatures, the various temperatures of light.
Mm.
Therefore, when you see that, then you understand the temperature of the shadow. So it's all incredibly beautiful stuff. And so I'd recommend everybody to start drawing and painting. Life-saving moment.
Do you ever just like pick up a ballpoint pen and just start doodling?
Yeah, sometimes when I'm bored, I'll do that. But mostly it's turned into like every day I come in and do paintings.
Yeah.
I do more watercolors now than I do with oil.
Are you getting used to it yet?
No, I've still got a long ways to go. I'm just getting started.
Watercolors are
that's
hard.
That's a fact. I still love what I do incredibly
much. You should, But
yeah,
watercolors are tough. They are very tough. How much of your work that you have now on your website is watercolor?
Not much.
Really?
Not much.
Wow.
No, there's because they're not really for sale.
Oh, really?
The watercolors have done more for me, and I've got a large group of them that are down in the gallery. But they're I'll have a show more in that fine art range, probably in the next year.
Yeah,
and it'll probably mostly be watercolor. Because here's the thing, when I do watercolors, I'm doing it a lot for me, and I'm capturing people and scenes that are really interesting to me, and things that are like I'm living.
Yeah.
You know, not doing fantasy art and, you know, painting like things that happened in the past. They're more for me currently. this is why I'm an artist. This is why I see the world the way I do. This is something that is inspiring to me, so I paint it. But those tend to not sell very well.
That's
because,
odd.
Again, they're not, you know, sensational. It's like a lot of my work is. It's like these scenarios. And honestly, I would say 98% of the people that buy art in the motorcycle world are really subject matter driven. It's what's in the painting.
Right.
It's like, does it have, you know, an Evo? Does it have a knucklehead? Or does it have a pretty girl? Or, you know, I mean, all those things. And of course, how I paint it has something to do with, but it's still more in general what's going on in it. Yeah. So you end up pushing those things a little further.
Sure.
And make them a story. So people grasp the story and they love it and they tell the stories to their guests when they come over, and it's really fun for them to get engaged with that.
Yeah.
Whereas in fine art world, it's not about subject at all. It's all about how you do it.
Yeah.
So when I just do a watercolor, I'm just studying this guy's face and painting it where you have a like a window into who this is. And that generally is nowhere near as interesting, because a lot of people aren't at that level, you know, of being able to see why art is really valuable because of how I did it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's just another step up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm totally cool with that because I like doing both. No. But personally, for me, it's the watercolors have a much more sentimental or real life value.
Can you get the same level of detail with the watercolor that you can with the oils?
Sometimes more, you know.
Really?
But probably the thing that makes watercolors so unique is the way you the accidents happen, you know? I mean, the wind's blowing, you know, you got a little more water, you got a little tidal wave. You
know? I mean, that's why I don't do watercolor. That's why
that stuff can be really beautiful, you know? Because I was going back to, you know, when you have that point of view of putting something in a painting, making it all there for everyone to see, the opposite effect is that is when crazy shit happens and accidents and the things that you don't expect are actually what is the nicest, because that's harder to do. It's much harder to do a loose kind of mysterious painting than it is to just render the son of a bitch out, you know?
Yeah.
You got a photograph right here and you got your painting. I can make that look just like a photo or better. And most people think that's, wow, you're fantastic. It looks like a photo. But the real art is in the other part, that this what you choose to take away or allow to happen, you know, with some big, bold brushstroke that no one expected. That's you speaking, man, instead of me rendering out this image for everyone to see, you know. I don't know if that, again, I told you this might get a little artsy.
No, it's okay for me. I mean, and if my listeners are going to have to be okay with it because we're talking to you.
Well, I just hope, you know, it doesn't get too boring.
Nah.
It's like, I hear a lot of that. You know, people come to watch me paint at rallies and all, and, you know, it's interesting for a minute, but, you know, watching paint dry can get static.
So when you show up at the rallies, and you know, do you have picked beforehand of what you're going to paint? Or you have something already said you're going to paint while you're at the rally?
Yeah, generally.
Yeah,
generally.
And it's usually motorcycle related, probably, right?
Yeah, always. Yeah. Well, a couple times it hasn't been.
Yeah.
But like I got Daytona coming up in 3 weeks. So
yeah.
Almost three, a little over 3 weeks. Again.
Well, how many rallies do you do each year?
All the big ones, pretty much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have a national sales manager named Greg Rhodes. He keeps my schedule and makes sure that, you know, everything's all in order. And then I show up and do the meet and greet and do some painting. But he takes care of all that stuff. And I've got three people here that kind of help me do what I do so I can keep painting.
There you go. So you're gonna be in Daytona,
right?
You're gonna be in Laconia.
It moved us. Pardon me?
You going to be in Laconia?
You know, no, I won't. Unless they invite me again. Laconia is a tough rally. It's way up in the corner of the country.
Yeah.
It's a big party rally, so there's not a lot of art enthusiasts necessarily.
Sure.
and they don't have a spot to really set you up.
Oh, wow.
It's not conducive to an art gallery.
Yeah. What about Americade?
No, I haven't done that one.
No. It's a nice rally. I've been to it twice. It's in upstate New York.
Is it?
Lake George, New York.
Yeah.
It's a great rally. It really is.
What time of year is that one?
Usually first week of June. It's actually the week before Laconia.
Right.
Yeah.
And you guys, you know, you do those things in June and the weather can just be brutal.
Oh, look. Everybody knows that the word is, if it's raining, it must be Americade. So.
Yeah. See, and you know, for me to haul an art gallery out there with a trailer
and stay
there for the entire time, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, I bet.
So you've got to take that into consideration when you're going to expend that type of cash, because a lot of those rallies, that they're not there to buy art.
No,
you know?
Of course
not. It's just, you know, and then plus you got the economy, and art's certainly not something you need. It's we do well.
So we're art people in my house. We have pieces by Guy Layton? No. Oh man, my wife, she's a freak about his artwork. I actually have a piece of artwork from one of your proteges, Daniel James.
Oh yeah.
I have one of his pieces of work.
Cool.
Yeah, and
Dan's good, really good.
Yeah, I saw him. Go ahead. Sorry.
We worked 25 years together. Remember all those illustrations I was telling you?
Yeah, yeah.
Dan came and worked for me right out of his art school, and we were together for 25 years.
Right.
So he was a big part of that whole illustration thing.
Yeah.
He did all the airbrushing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I saw his work for the first time when I met you out in Deadwood. I was in the gallery a couple doors down, and that's where I saw one of his pieces.
Scott Jacobs Gallery.
Yeah, right, Jacobs Gallery, yeah.
And Dan set up with him. But yeah, I've known him for a long, long time. Yeah. He's finally made the break to just do fine art stuff. It's great.
Oh, you're going to be in Deadwood again this year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no changing that.
Well, I'll see you there, definitely, because I'll be there. So I'll stop in and see you.
Yeah, please do.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Good. Always a fun,
love,
fun
love,
rally.
Love to talk love art. Sturgis. Absolutely. No pencil work?
Pardon me?
No work with pencil?
I do, but not so much anymore. You know, I've done so much in the past, I just kind of lean towards paint anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love charcoal. When I do pencil work, it's back to that live model where I'll do a charcoal drawing or something.
Charcoal.
But, the pencil happens before a painting sometimes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Trying to figure out what the values are and where things go.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But it's all just preliminary things.
Right.
Then, you know, in order to do a painting, it's good to have an idea. Pencil's good for that.
That's the way I always used to start off. Just lightly pencil on the canvas what I want to do, and then the oil changes all of that. So you know, that's what happens. Right. Yeah. No pastel works though, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah, pastel.
Never liked pastel.
Oh.
It's just not I just don't see the use of it. It's not something I can control. You've got none of the flourish that you can do with a brush and all the different tools there.
Yeah.
Why do pastel when you can do oil? Oil gives you that much more fat.
So pastels and acrylic are pretty much on the same plane.
Yeah. Although I would take pastels over acrylic.
Really?
I really hate acrylic.
Really? Oh, well, I don't like acrylic either, but I don't hate it as much as I do pastel.
Yeah.
Pastel's just messy. It's just messy.
It's messy, and you can't get an edge, and it's just goofy. It's all over your fingers.
Yeah, it's everywhere. What are your thoughts on the digital age now, where people are doing artwork on the computer? What's your
good
thoughts?
Question.
Yeah, what's your thoughts?
You know, in the last, I've been putting my art on Facebook. And Instagram, later Instagram, but Facebook since, 2009, when it came out,
yeah.
And I've amassed, you know, a couple hundred thousand people that follow it.
Sure.
And the last year, I mean, I would dominate. I would have posts that would go to well over a million people.
Wow. You
know, just from sharing and stuff.
Sure.
And it was cool to see that. I dominated in the motorcycle visual world.
Sure.
You know, at least art-wise.
Yeah.
And this last year, man, it's so much different. There are thousands of paintings every day, new, that are pretty competent looking pieces that are all just dictated into like these AI search engines. And they're not engines, but it's AI generated art.
I hate
and
that.
And so you're seeing every day new content because it only takes basically 2 minutes to do one.
Yeah.
So if you've got the narrative right, you can speak into this thing and it'll produce a piece of art for you. So I'm seeing an incredible amount of that. And it basically will, I've seen it do technology take down photography because I used to have a ton of photographers that made a great living doing that. They're all gone. Illustration, gone. And now it's kind of hit the fine art world, except it's still pixels. So there is no, but it doesn't matter because it's all digital anyway when you're viewing it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There is no original to view and see right. the thickness exactly. of the stroke and all that.
Sure.
Which is, they aren't there yet, but with all these automatrons and robots, I imagine they'll get there with that too. But it's,
I hope not.
Yeah, it's pretty new, but yeah. I'm telling you, the art is actually amazing in certain
it is. I you probably more than likely agree with me, but I think it's killing the talent. Because nobody wants to do it anymore. It's
there's no question.
Right.
Think about it. And there's I put this up on Facebook. I mean, I found one and I put it up there, and it went viral. But it was when you first glance at it, it's like some hot chick sitting on a bike and like a shop. But the AI fucked up and did two right hands.
Oh, really?
When you first look at this, yeah, take a look. And it just, I mean, there's hundreds of comments about that. And then, but when you first look at it, it's like, wow. And then I started really digging into, you know, what you can do. And you can actually tell it to paint like me because there's enough of my stuff out there that
sure,
I'll study
absolutely,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you do with that, you know?
Yeah.
So where I'm going to go with it is probably a little bit more of in progress.
Yeah.
Videos, reels of me actually painting it. And here I'm, you know, it's like Bob Ross. I'm putting a little happy stroke right here. It's like, there's a happy little happy air cleaner. You
know? Awesome. Yeah. Have you ever tried
at least that'll separate it.
You know? Have you ever tried to draw on a computer using, you know, on a tablet or on a screen or something like that? Have you ever tried to do that?
That's all I do.
No, I mean,
as far as I do on the computer.
Oh yeah, okay. So you're painting on what software are you using?
I'm just, well, a lot of my work starts with old photographs, as you know, or a compilation of photos that I'll go shoot,
right?
And then I scan them all in, and then I have them in Photoshop. So I'll take up to like 15 photos and piece them all together, and get a composition that I like,
right?
And that's all done on a Wacom pad.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I've used those.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't use a mouse hardly at all.
Use
or
the pen?
A computer the regular way. It's all done with a pen.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean everything. I check my email with a pen. Everything is done with
got
a
my pen.
Pen
right here. See?
There you go. Yeah.
I
so
use,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I use Sketchbook Pro to do all my artwork. Yeah. If I'm gonna do something like, and I do it on my tablet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I'm not gonna demonize the whole thing. It's just part of like technology, and technology is so deflationary; it just wipes out whole industries. And it's just now hitting the art world. And anyone can pick an artist's style and type it in and have a pretty damn good piece of art because it's analyzing what artists do to make it great. So it's not just subject; it's also combining all of it, and it's remarkable, actually.
It is.
What it can do.
The downside of it is it's one-dimensional.
Yeah.
You know, because you go to a gallery, when I go see your stuff, when I was out there and looking at it, you can, like you had said earlier, you can see the brush strokes. You can see the, it's got depth to it, you know. And
well,
you
it's going to turn my originals into a lot more valuable because it's something that there is no original. It's just an assembly of pixels, yeah. And so
exactly.
Ultimately, there's going to be people that have the means because they're going to collect the real thing.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be even more rare because it's going to basically eliminate, you know, a whole lot of artists. I said this on a Facebook post or someone who was talking about this whole process and said, well, imagine if like an illustrator like Rockwell, you know, had that ability to just type in what he wanted. I mean, why the hell would you go through all the pain in the ass trouble to paint a painting? It's a lot of work. You wouldn't. So it just wipes it all out. You wouldn't even know to try.
Yeah.
It's like, why would I use that when I could just have the computer do it?
I think that right there is folks who do that. And I mean, maybe they have a degree of talent, but I just think that's a complete disrespect to their own talent if they have it. You know?
Yeah, but how would you even know?
Again, you have to see it with your own two eyes. You have to be able to hold it in front of you and stare at it on the wall, and then that's the only way for you to know. Looking at it on a computer screen is a different story.
You know, I liken it to, you know, I used to like have this like photographic geographic locations. I mean, I knew map. When I look at a map, I know where I'm at. I know how it works. Yeah. And now with the GPS on the phone, I mean, I've just lost a lot of that ability. It's like, why the hell go through that and pull out a map out of the glove box and find out where you're at and all that? When you just, Siri, where the hell am I?
Exactly, so, man.
Yeah, so in the art world, the same goddamn thing's going to happen, right? Yeah, so it's like, why the hell go through all this work when I can just tell the computer to do it?
Yeah, that's the problem is, though.
Yeah, it's true, and it's sad, you know, in a huge way. It's now. Well, there's a lot of crazy things happening now, but I mean, that in the art world is definitely one of them.
Wow.
It's something to pay attention to.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate you being on the show with me. How can people learn more about you and what you're up to next?
Well, I've got DUHL Art on Instagram. It's just Dual Art's my name, David UHL Art. And then on Facebook, it's David Ewell Studios. And I post a lot on that. And sometimes the processes and, you know, the things that inspire me. So Facebook's probably I have a lot of people on there, you know, like almost like 200,000. And they're interested. So as long as there's interested people, I'm going to put things out there.
Yeah.
We have a website that's really extensive.
Yep.
That's ewellstudios.com. If you just Google my name and hit images, I'm sure you'll probably have more than you care to see. Then I have if you were interested in purchasing something, Greg at ewellstudios.com. Greg Rhodes is his name. So it's just Greg. He can tell you everything about what you're getting into. And when you buy my art, the one thing we've done really right is we really paid attention to keeping the scarcity there and the edition so small that you're freaking lucky if you get one.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't do let's say I'm going to do an edition of 100 or 200 or 500 or whatever. It's not like that. A lot of times most times we limit it to a time period. So like if you go to Daytona, you'll have a shot at this Daytona piece I do. And at the end of the rally, we close the edition.
And that's it.
And that, yeah.
Wow.
And so it makes everything really scarce.
Yeah.
And that way you don't get greedy and make tons of them and they're not sitting around waiting for somebody to buy them.
Yeah.
Everyone who buys stuff, if the value goes up fast because there's always so many more out that want to buy it.
Right.
And so it's like the steampunk stuff. Most of those editions, I'd say all of them, sold out in less than a half hour.
Really?
And so, and we didn't increase the edition size.
Wow.
And so we keep it the same. So you're lucky if you get one. But that's really cool to me because everyone knows they got something of value.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not, you can't make more. It's just, you're done. And they're numbered, they're signed. And if you end up getting in some kind of heat or you get a divorce, I mean, it's whatever reason you have to sell something.
Yeah.
You call Greg, and Greg usually has somebody waiting to buy it.
Wow, so really? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you really take care of your customers, and then you build an excellent secondary market.
Wow.
And so we continue to do that. Sometimes we have a flash sale, and if you're on Greg's email list, which you can sign up on the website, if you're on his email list, we will sell a piece for 24 hours, and that's it. So
really? Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, if you don't get it in that 24 hours,
too bad.
You're right, getting it.
Yeah. Too bad.
Or you're going to pay a lot from somebody else who knows they have something special.
So, like, for example, let me ask you on this topic. Now, like on your website, I'm looking at one right now, The Alchemist. It says rare. Now, what does that mean when it says rare?
That means that there's probably one or two left. And usually what that means is there's somebody who had one on consignment that has one available. Wow. That's why the price is so different. Then, if you look at the original price, what it came out for, and what the price is now, that's where you can see how valuable they are.
Okay.
Or how many is in circulation. And some people just never sell any. And so it's just sold out, period. And no one has any.
So when you say that there's one or two left, does that mean these are originals? These are original?
No. The original was sold out. The original was sold before I finished it. And they sold.
Damn.
Yeah. All those steampunk pieces were like $80,000 and sold immediately.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Instantly. And so they're gone. But the prints, they start at $12.95, $18.95, and $24 for a gigantic one. That's the opening prices. And then they'll start with those prices. And then by the end of the day, they were like 4,000 or 5,000 and 6,000.
Damn.
Because
really?
Because they're gone. And it's the scarcity and the rareness that makes that price change.
Yeah.
So that first steampunk, it's just like having gold on your wall.
Yeah. I would think so.
Because there are none, you know? Think about it. That's the beauty of any asset, right?
Yeah.
And you just don't make more. That's what I wish the government would start listening to about the dollar. It's like,
stop making more.
Keep making more all the time. It's like, well, this little thing called inflation.
Yeah. You know? I hear you. Well, Dave, listen, I really appreciate you hanging out with me and talking about your artwork. It's been a lot of fun, you know, and as a guy who's an artist also, I'm like geeking out over here. So,
thank you. I appreciate it. It's certainly a different topic, I'm sure, but it's fun to explore a little bit.
Absolutely.
I have some new stuff coming out that will be pretty interesting. I'm doing a piece right now for Harley Davidson, which is neat because I haven't really done much with them for a few years. They changed a lot of their, basically
everything
processes. Everything about them has changed. But they brought back what's called the dealer awards. What they do is they'll give the dealers that excel and take care of their customers will get an award. So Harley called me, and I'm making their awards.
Oh, no way, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I just got back from Milwaukee doing that whole thing with Bill Davidson and the archives, kind of pulling down bikes and putting together some compositions that I'll put out there and show everyone
what we're doing.
I have a piece that's really fun. I chose to do a dealer from the old, like the 40s. And those dealers, when they sold the bike, it would all be dressed up and perfect, straight from the factory, all the fenders.
Yeah.
It would be perfect stock Harley Davidson. And then they'd take it out and bob it, chop it, whatever. And then they'd ride back in. So this dealer's got his little tie on. And he's looking outside his dealership at these three bobbers, which are way cool. They're looking a lot of times on the stock one.
Yeah. So,
rolling his eyes going, bobber blasphemy is what I'm going to call it.
Have you been to, the Harley Davidson Museum, right?
Oh my God. So many times. I was just there last week.
Yeah. Oh my God. When you see all those old bikes, how do you geek out when you see all that? Thinking about what you can paint?
Of course. Oh my God, I mean, that's like I said, I'm a kid in a candy store with that. When I was just there, hanging out with Bill, and I'm doing a commission for Cliff Bluestein, which is the son of the CEO for Harley all through the 90s into the 100th anniversary. He was on the cover of Forbes. He was so successful with that company. It was was fabulous. And so his son wanted me to paint his dad's bike, his first bike, and that's kind of one of the little. So I took it down off of the archives racks and set it all up and did that photograph. And but in the process, I'm wandering around looking at all these bikes, and I ran across Elvis's first bike.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is, it's full of the coolest stuff ever. You're a bike guy.
I was there for the first time on my way back from Sturgis. I stopped there, and it was I was just like so overwhelmed. I could have stayed there for another 2-3 days just looking at all this old stuff. It's just fascinating.
Isn't it fabulous? Yeah, it's they did a great job of that. Yeah. You know, I just talked to Willie G last night about that. He and Bill called me. Sending him a watercolor, but yeah, he was really instrumental in how that thing looks.
Man,
you know,
that place
down
is
there.
Great. I mean, I especially love that first row of bikes from the very beginning up to like I think it was like late 20s. I was just I spent so much time there. Oh well.
Yeah.
You ride?
Oh yeah.
What
yeah,
do you
have? Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I can, of course, I love knuckleheads. I've got 6 knuckleheads in the one.
One. Yeah. 6?
No, I love them. I really love them. Well, I put them in paintings, so
okay.
I need them. There's a really good excuse.
What else you got?
I'm doing this really cherry total bone stock 44, which is a really rare bike.
Damn.
They only made 400. 43 was the only year that was a little less.
Right.
And it was war years, so they didn't make many, especially civilian bikes.
Yeah.
But that thing's going to be outrageous. And that's the one we're working on now. But yeah, I love those old bikes riding them around, but not much. They're just mostly you look at them. But I ride an 05 Springer.
Okay, well, there you go. That's fine. I got an 03 Heritage Anniversary Edition. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I love riding. It's just anymore, this part of my life has turned into more riding on airplanes. You know?
not as glorious, you know, right?
Yeah.
This is a little more comfortable.
I'll haul a bike to Sturgis, and I took my daughter out last year and did a full afternoon of riding around. Mostly, you know, you're busy meeting people.
Of course.
So you don't have a lot of time at these rallies and just kind of come to meet and greet and say hello to everybody who takes the time to come and say hi.
Yeah.
You know, and they're coming from all over the world.
Oh, sure.
You know, huge collector base in New Zealand and Australia. They come in gangs, you know. Like, what's up, mate? G'day. Hanging out. Yeah.
Damn. See you.
They're wonderful people. I mean, I love the biker community. I just love them. They're
good.
Such salt of the earth. Cool.
Well, I will see you. You're going to be in Deadwood, I guess, again this year, right?
Yeah, I'm always going to be there.
Well, I'll hook up with you. I'll catch up with you, and we'll meet up, and I'll see you out there.
Yeah. Right. My daughter was there last year. She's one to pay attention to, too. She's starting to do – so many people come up to me and go, you know, I really love your work. It's awesome. But would you just paint me, you know? Like, I can, but – you know, I've got a stack of things going on.
Yeah.
It's pretty expensive. But she is paints like better than me, or she's drawing is equally as good, if not better. And she's a musician, but she does it to pay for her albums and production stuff.
Sure.
You should see this piece she did with Kiwi Mike. He's an Indian restoring collector guy out of California. She just painted him in her second painting. I don't know if you're on Greg's email list.
Yeah, I am.
He'll send that out.
Yeah.
Check that out.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, Dave. I'll let you go. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done. But thank you very much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. And if you ever want to do it again, let me know. We'll,
absolutely, sir. All right.
We'll talk more art.
That's definitely.
That's my native language. I don't do well with words, but I can paint a picture.
Absolutely. Thanks so very much, Dave. Don't go anywhere.
All right. Okay. Bye.
The Motors Like a Man podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you'd like to help those that are dealing with the hardships of cancer and see your money go to those that it affects, go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. And the Gold Star Rad Foundation, we're helping families of fallen soldiers. So if you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, get on over to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. And Chasing the Cure, boys and girls, that's right. We're helping long-haul Paul Pelin complete his mission for ride 1 million miles for MS. Now, he was told years ago that a cure for MS was 1 million miles away, so he decided to ride that 1 million miles for that cure. Now, you can help him by going to longhaulpaul.com and donate to his quest for that cure for MS. Thanks for joining me and David here in the V-Twin Cafe, where he told us all about his artwork and all that. Man, it was beautiful stuff. So to learn more about David, get on over to his website at YuleStudios.com. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Man website at MotoMenPC.com. And don't forget to get on over to Ride With Ted YouTube channel. Watch some of the many videos I have over there. And if you would please, also, like and subscribe those videos. That's right. It's a tremendous help to the channel. And, of course, it does help the podcast. All right, boys and girls, for the rest of the Motorcycle Man team, thanks for listening. And remember, you say stupid crap so you don't have to. I'd say for the kids.